Of course, the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit is a podcast dedicated to practical politics. Practical politics is, of course, called practical politics because it is all non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is always rule-based politics, every 2 years, every 4 years. It's basically what you do at the voting booth. And then there is full-spectrum practical politics, or engaging and taking down an opponent by any means necessary, using the rules, but never breaking the rules. But to do anything, we have to start with practical politics, and in this case, it's the art of staying on message. It's having a consistent message. And our consistent message is a mantra, or white rabbit genocide you see on this front page. And we will also, in this podcast, engage in the geopolitical. We will talk about geopolitical events. We will talk about things from a unique white rabbit perspective. We will also go into white rabbit psychology and ecology and talk about everything you'd want to know about the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. And this is, again, the Horus the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. Over the course of making 61... the events in Egypt were very fast-moving, and the beginning of 62, I'm going to give you an update. Zawi Hawass is now claimed to be in trouble. Is Indiana Jones the next victim of Egypt's revolution? Apparently, Zawi Hawass, after a brief, I'll read this piece to you. It's going to be up on my Twitter. It's interesting reading. After a brief spate of looting 2 weeks ago, he said nothing of great value was taken. On Sunday, he admitted that the thieves had made up with 18 priceless artifacts, including two gold-encrusted wooden statues of King Tut, so on and so forth. He basically covered up how big the theft was. An acquaintance of his who visited him today at his office while protesters outside bade for his downfall described the usually supremely confident archaeologist as shattered by recent events and said most of his books and personal papers have already been moved out of the office. In the waning days of the Mubarak regime, he threw his weight behind the established order and also appeared to have hid the extent of the damage done at the famed Egyptian Museum, one of the great repositories of human heritage. Apparently, this goes back to what I said in 60. You have three divisions here we're watching. Pink rabbits, of course, are by and large, most of them, hold to the Jewish tribe for some reason or another. And some of them, of course, are just political traitors to us. Rabbits that look like us have no loyalty to us. But globally speaking, pink rabbits usually fall in, the largest category I know of, and is Jew rabbits. Then you have the other variety. You have pink rabbit banksters, and pink rabbit banksters, Rockefeller and Rothschilds, mostly hold to the Jewish flavor too. Not all. There are some there that are most distinctly, or it depends on how you define Jewish, doesn't it? Then you have pink rabbit elitesters, and pink rabbit elitesters are something else entirely, in my opinion. And this goes back to one big question, and the question, of course, is the Hyksos, and Zawi Hawass is watching King Tut, and King Tut, of course, is his father is Akhenaten, his mother is Akhenaten's sister, his grandmother is the famous Queen Tai, and all these big question marks over this time period, the Marna time period, in Egypt. And if there is, like I said in 60, a split, generally you're going to see eventually the Romans are going to attack, or the Germans are going to attack, because they're in Teutoburg Forest, and once the Germans attack, the first attacks come, well, the Romans are going to be shell-shocked. Most of the Romans aren't aware yet that they've been sold out. But if there has been a split, and I'm going to bet there has been, that the pink rabbit elitesters have extricated themselves, maybe from the banksters and the whole shebang as well. And the pink rabbit elitesters all, in my opinion, have ties to all the ones I have question marks on, all have ties to European royalty. But this time period in Egypt that Zawi Hawass is infatuated with, that always talks about, the King Tut time period, is very interesting. The big question mark, of course, is Akhenaten. The big question mark with Akhenaten is his mother, Queen Tai. And Akhenaten turned Egypt upside down. He's like a Bolshevik. Very unnatural. Did not act like anything typically European, although we know he had European genes. But Queen Tai is interesting because her mother and father, a lot of controversy over her mother and father, Yuya and Tuya. I'll pronounce them that way. And you can look her up. T-I-Y-E. And her father was assumed to be, in fact, it even says it now on the wiki, Tai's father, Yuya, was a wealthy landowner from upper Egyptian town of Akmen. He served as a priest and superintendent of oxen. Tai's mother, Tuya, was involved in many religious cultures, as her family titles attest. It would suggest she was a member of the royal family. The big problem, and sometimes it is suggested that Tai's father, Yuya, I'll just read it right from the wiki, was of Asiatic descent due to the features of the mummy and many different spellings of the name, which might imply non-Egyptian name and origin. Some have suggested the queen's strong political and unconventional religious views might have been due not just a strong character, but to foreign descent. There's a lot of controversy over Queen Tai. What on earth is up with her? I didn't really at first believe a lot of the controversy myself because Yuya, the female, her mother, Tuya. I keep on getting mixed up. They sound alike, don't they? Yuya and Tuya. Tai's mother, Tuya, Tuya. Tai's mother, the mummy actually has like blonde hair, so I didn't think anything was up with it. But there's something going on with this, and we've discussed this before. There's something there that we're missing. There's something there missing because Zahi Hawa's New World Order has just went down in flames. Now, if he gets kicked out of Egypt, we'll know that they didn't know it was coming. They didn't realize that the Romans didn't realize their generals had sold them out and they got offered a deal by Arminius and they ducked out of Dodge before all hell breaks loose. And that they were left holding the bags and they were some of the first casualties. But this New World Order having to do with King Tut, having to do with the Hyksos, has everything on the group that walks around with the Old Testament, the Torah, talking about Egypt, talking about they were kicked out of Egypt. This goes back to the Hyksos. We've talked about this before. But there's been a split now. There's been a split, and it's obvious to me. Might not be obvious to the rest of my listeners, the rest of the world, but it was obvious to me at 60. It's obvious to me now that there's a split. And when there's a split, there's casualties. So if Zahi Hawa stays on, he's on the good side of the casualties. If Zahi Hawa gets kicked out of there, because a lot of Egyptians apparently hate him, he's got right now at this minute, he's got archaeologist students, hundreds of them, camped out outside of his office calling for him to get the hell out of there. You're going to have casualties here, and these guys are apparently devastating. Hosni Mubarak didn't know it was coming. He was devastated. The House of Saud is apparently devastated. Now, of course, what is the connection between all these groups? Because I don't believe you can hold together something as diverse as Rockefeller, Rothschild, Zahi Hawass, the House of Saud, and all these games going on in the Middle East. What is the connection? The connection is something to do with the Hyksos. The connection is probably something to do with something by the name of Neanderthal rabbits. And we've discussed this before. There's something here we miss that they can test for. And of course, when you get into the little Jew rabbits, they believe that there's something in the female line that can be tested for time and time again. If you have a DNA test and they say, oh, you're a Jew. Well, how do they know that? And we've talked about this before, but what you're seeing is a mystery start to unravel. But when the Hyksos came to power, The reason they were let into Egypt is because there was a corruption in the priest class, and it was a lot broader. And these corrupt priests went to them and let them in the back door and then turned the place upside down. These priests basically threw out all the Egyptian gods, period. It's like they were lying in wait, like little Decepticons, Egyptian priests. And these priests, I'm guessing, all had blonde hair and stuff like that. Yep. That's my opinion. My opinion is they look just like us. And this priest class, in my opinion, also went on to run, what we think of as Talmudism. I mean, I'm speculating wildly, but I'm going to. They went on to run what we think of as Talmudism. Talmudism in the Roman Empire was not what we think. It was a dominant Babylonian mystery religion, then became a minority religion, what we think of as Judaism. But the Jews, what we think of as a Jew nowadays wasn't a Jew then. The Jews then were the ones running Talmudism. If you go talk to old Bob Whitaker, and they were running Talmudism. They were the Pharisaic group running Talmudism. In my opinion, this is their connection. And this is a long arrangement they've had with this group, and now you're seeing it split off. You're seeing the deals were struck. And most likely they were struck a handful of years ago, or especially by 2008. And we're seeing this come to fruition as we come into the end game on who's been sold out and why. But the biggest group to sold out would be the pink rabbit, and that would be the Jew rabbits. And this would have everything to do with King Tut and all the mysteries that we've talked about. And it has everything to do with genetics. But artifacts in regards to Yuya and Tuya. Tai's parents are missing. Things regarding Tai's parents are missing, Queen Tai. And this whole entire time period is questionable. The Egyptians erased this time period, Amarna, from their history. Interesting stuff. Fascinating. And, of course, we have Berlusconi to stand trial for sex case. What do I think? Do I think that'll go through? Really depends on when they really start speeding things up. Because once they get the war on, the whole planet's going to shut down, in my opinion. Yeah, things aren't going to be the same after that. Now, what happens between here and there, I don't know. It's going to get even more interesting, and things are fast-moving. But what you're starting to see is the lines between the pink rabbits are drawn. There's a split there, and that split is becoming more and more obvious to me. Exactly what it means and how it all works out, well, we'll just have to wait and see. But the alternative news and researchers have always said, to their benefit, that we don't know why you white nationalists get so caught up in the Jews. There's another group behind them that are just using them to front run. And they're not going to have a new world order. And they appear to be right on that. Because you don't have a new world order. In my opinion, the Pink Rabbits period won't have a new world order. But this new world order based on King Tut has just taken a big turn. Zahi Hawass walks around and calls himself a pharaoh. You have to call him a pharaoh to be hired there or something like that. And they may all descend from this period, this Amarna period. This is all having to do with the Hyksos, all having to do with the Shepherd Kings, and all having to do with who's a Jew. Who's a Jew in modern sense. And the big question I have are the priest class. The priest class and the pink rabbit elisters and European royalty. And we'll see, and we'll keep this conversation alive, and we got the split in place between the pink rabbit banksters, the pink rabbit elisters, and the pink rabbits, so we can talk about it formally without becoming too confused. And every time, when you take it apart, you can actually pinpoint different areas. And of course, I think this priest class comes out of Babylon to some extent, this corrupt priest class. But we will see. We will soon see. And Akhenaten, again, all the question marks, but they had artifacts, several different artifacts stolen from this group, so it should be interesting to see what the whole deal is. We're going to find out, because someone already knows. Someone on Team White Rabbit already knows. But Zahi Hawass may get booted. If he gets booted, well, then we have an answer to our question. And it's going to be extremely ugly for a little group of rabbits in the first round. And you can guess who they are going to be. And we'll just have to wait and see, but check out my Twitter. What do I think is going to happen to Berlusconi? I don't know. I don't know. It really depends on when they get the war on. He's going to trial for what? Having sex with a 17-year-old girl or proposition a 17-year-old girl? I have no idea. I have no idea. Silvio Berlusconi, does that mean anything to the Russian, German, Italian access? Absolutely not. That was blessed by the Popey Pope. The Popey Pope. And the Popey Pope's a big deal. Now, what else do I have to say here? Is there even news that happened in the last day since I'm making these MP3s? The German stock exchange is buying the New York Stock Exchange. That's a big deal, and everyone in New York's all ticked off about it. We've already discussed this. My listeners know that there's an eagle rising. There's an eagle rising, and that eagle is putting together the pieces and consolidating power. And there's also been a sellout. The Pink Rabbit Leadsters bent over a barrel, have sold them out. Whether or not there's a core group of bankers like the Rockefeller and Rothschild, there could be. There could be. I don't know how it's going to break down. We'll keep this going. But they've been bent over a barrel, and they don't have a new world order, so they've made arrangements. And I'm guessing the Germans are just buying themselves something. It's much better the Germans do it than the Chinese. It's much better the Germans do it than someone else. Now, what are they going to do with the New York Stock Exchange? Well, I don't even know if there's going to be. I don't know what all our plans are here. We're just going to have to take it from there. But this is just another episode of German soft power becoming a little too blatant. A little too blatant. And someone has been, well, we've talked about this before, financially. They've been pinned financially. They've been pinned nine ways to Sunday. And this is just yet another deal. Now, there's a whole group that emails me and say, Horst, the Jews in Germany are taking over the Jews in America. And Horst, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews. And I could go on one of their long rants, and I will maybe in one of the next MP3s because it's a little ridiculous. There's a big difference between being an anti-Semite, like me, and being totally obsessed and not being able to see anything.
just walking around and doing these Jew rants, when they go down in the first round, you're going to feel kind of stupid. So kind of tone that stuff down. You know, there's a big difference between being an anti-Semite. Nothing wrong with that. I mean, obviously their elites hate us. Nothing, no use in them hiding it. No use in hiding that we can't get along. No use in hiding your feelings, but you need to get over the obsession with everything being the Jews. The German stock exchange buying the New York stock exchange probably doesn't have as much to do with the Jews as you think. But you guys got to knock that stuff down. Knock that stuff down a couple notches or you're going to feel probably dumb after the first round. And you've been warned. There's more to this group than meets the eyes, but they're a component. You got a piece of the puzzle. There's a difference between obsession with the Jews and being, having a healthy anti-Semitic reaction to a group that runs around trying to kill white rabbits. There's a difference. Knock off the obsession. Tone it down a few notches. You should see some of these rants that come in, on the Jew rabbits. But from now, in the next little piece, I'm going to talk about some current events. I'm going to talk about Bye Bye Blackbird. And we're going to talk about the Norway spiral and what's really going on, what's coming down the pipeline. I'll keep you abreast of all the rumors and all the news because I think a great deal of these rumors are by and large true in this case. Sooner or later, if white rabbits have the type of technology that I believe we have, we're going to start demonstrating it, but it won't be in an obvious way because the technology is it's a little too broad for us to all get our minds around. But we're going to try to get our minds around it in the next little segment. I'm going to talk about some stuff right in front of our face. And before we do that, I'm going to go on a brief explanation, and we're going to talk about stealth. We're going to talk about how the green goddess, our Godzilla, has went into stealth mode here. We're going to talk about that. Okay, let's go to the wild side here. Let me answer some questions or give my thoughts on particular recent events that are involving natural disasters, animal deaths, and next generation weapons that all the, believe it or not, many of the non-European groups on this planet are talking about it as if we have it and as if White Rabbits is doing it. So let me talk to some Japanese listeners here and all the Far East listeners about these particular type of this physics that has been resurrected on this planet, for lack of a better word. And we'll go into some history of, because it's very, white rabbits typically do not understand how we operate. You really have to sit back and think about it, and I'm the same way. Let's go back in time for a minute. In the early 80s, there was a crazy Russian colonel. Some crazy Russians had it in their mind that we had already had, in America, we had stealth technology, stealth airplanes, planes that could disappear off of radar, planes that couldn't be seen on radar, planes that were just as difficult to see on radar as a little bird. And this was thought to be absurd, ridiculous, and undoable. It was thought scientifically impossible. And in the late 80s, more and more Russians were talking about it because Russians have very good intelligence and they had talked about it as if we had it. In other words, this crazy Russian colonel or whoever it was in Russia that first said we had it based on his research, basically more and more Russians were coming on board. And then, of course, no American would believe it. Americans believed they were seeing UFOs or something. You know, white rabbits in Europe are saying, well, that's a UFO. You know, it's a little alien. It's not white rabbit technology. And then, of course, we have the famous event, the bombing of Saddam Hussein by the stealth bomber, by the little stealth bombers who basically look pretty space age, right? I mean, they're stealth technology and they were unveiled in front of the world. But we don't unveil stuff in front of the world until we're ready to do damage with it. It's a concept, and I think you could do this over and over again going back hundreds of years. If some king brought out some advanced longbow, he's not going to let his opponent know about it. You know, he's got some big crossbow on the battlefield. They're not going to let anyone know about it until it's too late, until they're ready to do damage. Now, there's some spy out there who probably knew about it ahead of time, just like that early Russian colonel. But, you know, that's just the way we operate, even when we don't realize we're operating like that. And we always underestimate our abilities. But non-white rabbits on this planet do not underestimate our abilities. If anything, based on our past, based on what we are capable of doing, based on what we have done, to them we're capable of anything, which is kind of interesting. They know more about race than most white rabbits. Fascinating stuff. But What I consider this next generation, this type of stuff that they're rolling out in front of us, and I believe they started the process of rolling it out already. Most people just aren't aware of it, except maybe in Japan, some elements are aware of it. There definitely some elements on this planet are far more aware of it. Different heads of governments in Latin America than any European. I believe you're at that state right now where it's getting rolled out and we don't realize it until they show it to us and tell us about it, but by that time it'll be too late. It's kind of like stealth bombers, you know, hitting Saddam Hussein. We're sitting like Saddam Hussein and they're starting to pinprick all around us using this technology and we just don't realize it yet. But I'm going to discuss some certain events and my ideals based on it. But there's always been, for this particular type of physics, what's called, some people call it scalar torsion, electromagnetic weapons, EM weapons, Tesla howitzers, phase conjugate howitzers. You're dealing with a particular type of physics. The physics, I'll label it torsion physics, which is a pretty interesting, fascinating concept, and we're going to go into that, and I'm going to define it as we discuss the first event. Give you a simple explanation, or the one I use at least to try to understand it, because I don't completely have my brain around it, but since I'm the only one discussing this stuff from this particular angle, a racial white rabbit angle, I will try to tackle these questions. But there's always been a Lieutenant Colonel Tom Bearden, and he's in my opinion, I first thought he was a nutball, but that my first opinions of these things are usually out there. And Lieutenant Colonel Thomas E. Bearden, he has a PhD in MS in nuclear engineering, he has a BS in mathematics. He's not exactly an idiot, but he's been way ahead of the pack. And I don't know what's true in this particular angle and what's false, but he's been way ahead of the pack when it comes to torsion physics and EM weapons. It's all down one particular angle. When you get into the Germans in World War II, you get into the Glocke, the Bell. Well, you're dealing with torsion physics, rotation. You know, as Richard Hoagland says it best, rotation, rotation, rotation. That's what you're dealing with. Now, what are you rotating? Well, we're going to get into that when we talk about the first event I was asked about, and that's the Norway spiral. Many, I think the rumors that I'm hearing about it are probably true because it's the simplest explanation. And the Norway spiral is something that everyone listening can easily look up and you can see it. It's this big spiral in the air. And what happened was old Taliban was over there giving the speech and the Russians were testing a missile and the Russian missile just basically disappeared. It got zapped. Kind of like hitting a big bug zapper. It just got zapped. And the Russians went silent on it. My enemy's new age group, the Pink Rabbit New Age groups, went silent. No one knew what it was, and then they came out and said that it must have been the UFO or something like that, because that's all what they say. But there's a more rational explanation. There is a harp-like field that the Europeans have. I believe it's north of Trondheim in Norway. And that harp-like field, and the reason I call it harp-like, because it's similar to the field we have in Alaska, is by and large Northern European, and the people that operate in it are Northern European, and that's just a cover for quote-unquote German, because all Northern Europe is considered German by the Germans. And that doesn't mean if you live in Minnesota and you have blonde hair and blue eyes, you're considered German too. That's how they operate. Get used to it. But by and large, the question is, could it put up an array like that? And in theory, yes, because I know a little bit about SDI, Star Wars. Star Wars came out in the early 80s. In 1983, the individual that had the patents on the actual harp fields. Let me get his name for you here. The harp field patents in America were filed in 1983. And they were filed by Bernard Eastman. And in the file, in the actual patents themselves, it talks about, and this was all attached to Ronald Reagan's Star Wars. In the patents themselves, it has always been talked about that this harp field in Alaska could be used for missile defense. And that, of course, because a harp field, if you look at a harp field, it just looks like a bunch of arrays sitting out there. It looks like a bunch of antennas, old TV antennas of some kind. It doesn't look like much. But what you're dealing with is a very sophisticated physics, and the reason it's sophisticated is because you can be so creative with it. But what is torsion? What would in theory create that spiral? Well, torsion is the spiraling and folding and pleating in the fabric of space-time itself. And the big kicker is that certain parties on this planet believe they've mastered the engineering of it, or they believe it's engineerable. In other words, you're not only dealing with torsion, the concept of torsion, but the spiraling, folding, and pleating of in the fabric of space-time itself, but that it's engineerable. So when you see that big circle up in the air, that's an actual torsion field, a torsion array, many people believe. Out of the Hart field in Norway, operated by and large by the Germans and Northern Europeans, or quote-unquote Europeans. Germans always like to disguise themselves as European. Well, it's the way they operate. And basically, they run Europe, by and large. And people like them running Europe, so that's the way it goes. But by and large, that's what it would look like if you go back to the 1983 patent. That's what you'd be dealing with. But if you're dealing with the spiraling, folding, and pleating of the fabric of space-time itself, and if it is engineerable, that's what you'd have. You put up a big field, and then it would just zap a missile. Why would it zap it? Well, it's like hitting a bug zapper. You're just hitting an actual field, a torsion field, and that's what it would be like. You know, some people say elements of it fell to Earth. Other people say it would disappear. It could actually do either. It's kind of like a big bug hitting a bug zapper. The guy sitting next to me says that's what Joseph P. Farrell, our Dr. Farrell, describes it as, and he's much better at describing these things than me, so I'll use that as an explanation. If a big bug hits an old-fashioned bug zapper, something real high-powered, if it's a big bug, half of it will fry, half of it will sit there until it fries off, and, you know, maybe some pieces fall. Other than that, if you see a little bug hit it, well, it'll just disappear. You know, it's hitting a high, it's just hitting a field of electricity. But in this case, it's hitting a torsion field. The missile would hit a torsion field. And so, in regards to if this is doable, we don't know until something's been done. And that's just how our race operates. But I will say this. The Israelis have always said that they had a Samson option. You can look this up. Samson being the biblical Samson. S-A-M-P-S-O-N. And then they could put up 1,000 missiles over Europe and just destroy Europe as revenge for the Holocaust and stuff like that. Well, the Germans have taken a lot of shit, and I use that word blatantly. I'm going to blatantly use the word. There's no other word for it. And the German, especially German children, have taken a lot of shit. So you can cover little rabbit's ears, but this is simply a fact. I don't know any other way to express it except to use foul language. From the Israelis and from Jew Rabbit International and from Team Pink Rabbit, and there's only so much shit you're going to take before you put something on display to totally drop mouths. Before they say, look, we don't care how many missiles you have. You're not going to do anything we don't want you to do. But they're not going to do that until it's too late for you to do anything about it. Right? Isn't that common sense? And so by putting this field up, they would be sending a simple message. And the question is, do I think it was them? Yes. The simple explanation is always the best. If I have a patent from 1983 from Eastman, who had something to do with SDI, by the way, over at Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar, he can tell you all about Star Wars and the fight politically Star Wars. The communists were up in the air over it. We now know why. It had something to do with what a Hart field was capable of doing in regards to missile defense. It made certain elements of the Cold War obsolete immediately. Fantastic. But basically, if you have a patent for it, then there's a simple explanation to what happened in Germany. It's not aliens. It's not some sophisticated, it is sophisticated, but it's not something unexplainable. It's just something that we don't have in our textbooks yet. And that's nothing new. That's nothing new. Stealth bombers weren't in the textbooks until it's too late. But the simplest explanation is right there. Now, do I think the Russians knew about it? I don't think the Russians who fired the missile knew about it. I think it freaked them out. But you would never tell them anyways because that would ruin the effect. You don't want anyone knowing about it except a handful. Do I think the Russians at the Surov facility? And the Surov facility is the Russian HARP facility. It's over in, let me pronounce this correctly. Over in Nizhny Novgorod. Yes, I think I got that right. I'm not even going to try it again. It's Nizhnynovgorod. And that is the Surov ionospheric heating facility, and you can see it. I'll put its actual website or something about it up on my Twitter, and it is over there in that city I named, and I'm not going to try to name again because I think I got it close to correct. But I'll put this up on my Twitter. But the Russians had one of those, and supposedly we know the one in Northern Europe, the one in north of Trondheim, was turned up to a very high level. But supposedly the Surov facility in Russia was also turned up to high level. So I'm guessing some Russians did know about it. But, you know, you don't want to ruin the effect. You just want to take it down. And what better on a Russian missile, because the Russians and the Germans are operating together, and the Russians have what probably some of the most sophisticated missiles, if not the most sophisticated on Earth. You know, the only other super sophisticated missiles are going to be in America. So what a better way to put it on display and tell, you know, all Team Pink Rabbit to shut the hell up. Look what we got. You want to put up 50,000 missiles? We don't care. They'll hit our bug zapper. So it's high time for us to see something. I do agree with that. But I don't agree with all these radical explanations like it's Martians and it's UFOs. Team Pink Rabbit's New Age group, and I haven't given you one of the names to it. I know I keep getting emails saying, please give us the name. I can't do that yet. And there's going to be a very good reason for that. I'm sorry for that. Usually I put stuff on my Twitter. I give you everything, but this is something I can't give you yet. They have said it was UFOs, it's their space brothers. So, we know it's the Germans. There's a simple explanation. But if you look at the actual patents to Hartfield alone, in Alaska, and people scratch their head over this, how could this be used for missile defense? Well, there's something you're missing, and that something is torsion. That something is torsion, and what it is actually capable of doing once you get it to the engineering stage. And this is something the Germans were dealing with in the 30s. That's a long time ago. That's a long time ago. All you need is a template. A template of action, basically, over an area or region and that's what you need. And what I will do in the next section is we will go into templates. I'm going to talk about some other events. We're going to talk about Bye Bye Blackbird. But I believe the simplest explanation is always the easiest, always the direct, always the best. Now, in the next section, I'm going to go into Bye Bye Blackbird. Now, that becomes more speculative, because we don't have any necessary patents for it. And we're also going to talk about earthquakes. We don't have any, I don't know of any patents being filed for earthquake weapons, although Tesla did talk about it. But once you deal with Hartfields, low cavity resonators, you can do anything you can write a template for. And I'll give you Doc Farrell's definition of a template. We'll try to keep it simple so you can understand. But the physics is extremely sophisticated in so much as you can become super creative with it. It doesn't look like too much. When you start talking about engineering the fabric of space-time itself, it becomes pretty wild stuff. But eventually, we're going to see it. Eventually, they're going to put it on display, and they're not going to let someone sit there and mouth off. They're not going to say it. They're just going to do it. They're not going to brag about it until after the fact. But I do believe it was the Germans. I do believe that the Russian and the German facilities are linked up, that the Suras facility is linked up. Now, that's just the one we know about in Russia. Russia's got a lot of land. There's only one in America and Alaska that we know about. There's only one in Northern Europe that we know about. But do I think that the Russians and the Germans have their Hartfields linked up on some level? I don't think it's an overt linking. I think it's a covert linking, and I think it's been there a long time. They're not going to let someone annihilate European children if they can do something to stop it. You know, let's face it, no missiles have hit Europe yet. So I'm of the impression, even in America. In America, it's different because American elites hate us. Yeah, they hate white rabbits. In fact, the American elites, a lot of people don't like when I call Anglo-American because most of them aren't Anglo. There's some truth to that. The pink rabbits running Anglosphere, the pink rabbits in Anglosphere, America, the United Kingdom, Australia, New Zealand, they hate Europeans. I mean, the people running America right now are the most anti-European. We're infested with these pink rabbits over here. Do I think that they would link up the Hartfields? To answer my Asian listeners, and I don't know specifically. Let me check something real quick. Let me check and see if they have them in Japan. I can't find any website for a Hartfield in Japan, but every time we don't think someone has one, they generally do. Now, do I think they're linking these things up? I think the Russians and the Europeans have an overt linking. A covert linking, based on fraternal structures, German fraternities and whatnot, and based on a workable agreement. The reason I say this is, Angela Merkel made it clear to George Bush Jr., that they didn't need our missile defense long ago, and now we know why. Yeah, it's kind of obvious. They got their own. Now, it would be really, really put up a serious wall if they could link it with the Russians, my understanding is. But there's a lot of uncertainties with this physics. It hasn't been studied yet by the outside world. But I do believe there is a covert linking. Now, whether or not it's in America, well, we're going to talk about something else first, and I'll talk about whether or not the Hartfields are linked in America. It would really depend on Team Pink Rabbit. If the Pink Rabbit Elisters have sold them out, which is what I think, they've been bent over a barrel, screwed over, and had to sell them out. I think we see this every day as the Germans encroach on the heartland of America, buying up everything in sight. Better them than the Chinese. You know, people always complain in America about Russians buying this or Germans. It's a big stink. It's a big deal on Wall Street with the Germans taking over New York Stock Exchange. It doesn't bother me at all. Take it over and, well, streamline it, put whatever we don't need out of business, whatever. I think it is possible what you're saying is that the Pink Rabbit Elisters have been over the barrel so much that they've done a deal, and that deal could include linking Hartfields. But there could be another explanation. And so I'll answer some more questions in the next segment. We're going to go into Bye Bye Blackbird. It's a pretty complicated subject matter because it is all speculation. You know, is old Lieutenant Colonel Tom Bearden right that this stuff is out there? I believe it's a high probability, yes. I mean, that's what we're seeing. The simplest explanation is the best. It's not UFOs. It's not crazy Martians. It's not little creatures from another planet. It's white rabbits. It's stealth technology. It is stealth technology in the late 80s. And we haven't exactly seen the bombing of Baghdad. You know, they were, believe it or not, the U.S. military was putting stealth technology on display. Most people just didn't even know it. Most people, they were sending messages loud and clear, but that's how we operate. So let's go into the next segment, and let me continue this explanation. I'll try to give you an explanation of a template, and we're going to talk about Bye Bye Blackbird, about all these animals dropping dead. Many people have been reading about and commenting on all over the world about stuff coming out of the Pentagon about in regards to race-based weaponry and all this speculation. There was an event that happened, and I've been asked about it. One of the challenges with this event is that there are several of these all the time going on over the last maybe year or so. Now, I don't know whether or not we're just aware of it, but let's go ahead and talk about the first event, and I'll tell you what I don't like about it, or what kind of caught my attention. Down in Arkansas, they had a couple thousand blackbirds that just dropped dead, went crazy, and dropped dead from internal injuries. And we've had several episodes like this of cattle, various different things just dropping dead. In my opinion, what I would have done, even if it was some type of weapons test, I would immediately came on the news. I would have had the media say that, you know, I would have had the media go back in time and talk about every decade how we have all different kinds of strange animal events, and I believe there always has been, of groups of animals dropping dead for strange reasons going back in time. I think one of the challenges now with the Internet is we all see about everything and see everything mysterious up close and very quickly. You know, if a bunch of cattle drop dead in Australia, which I believe has happened mysteriously, well, we're going to find out about it on the Internet. So there's always been a bunch of strange animal deaths. It's just the reason is that we're finding out about it. But they didn't go on TV with some rational explanation of like, you know, well, there's a lot of strange animal deaths. But with the Internet and with everything going viral and all this type of thing on the Internet, well, we just find out about things. You know, but and I'd go back in time and talk about all the strange animal deaths 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. I mean, I believe this happens every year somewhere. But there was a bunch of birds, a bunch of red-winged blackbirds, bye-bye blackbirds. And they just got whacked by something. Something dropped them dead. They come on TV in Arkansas and nationwide America. And they say fireworks did it. Yeah, they lit off a bunch of fireworks and the birds went crazy and died from internal injuries. Now, when you hear explanations like that, and they're doing this all over Western civilization when a group of animals dies over the past couple of years, they're giving explanations that the average white rabbit listening says, something doesn't make sense. I mean, please give me some decent BS. Why does it make sense? Because everyone hearing that in Arkansas, all the people in Arkansas know darn well that fireworks don't cause a bunch of bird deaths simply because they've all lit off fireworks. It's such a stupid explanation. At the same time, it creates a great deal of fear and anxiety on a subconscious level. Because here you have a bunch of deaths. They're mysterious. You're walking down the street. You have hundreds of blackbirds in certain areas just all over the pavement and everything else. and they're telling you it's fireworks. But everyone in the area has lit off a Roman candle. Everyone's lit off bottle rockets. I'm not saying the wildlife loves them, but they don't exactly, flocks of seagulls don't exactly drop dead when you're lighting Roman candles on the beach. It just doesn't work that way. So they're giving an explanation that created a great deal of fear and anxiety. And in my opinion, they're doing it intentionally. Now, even if you were testing a weapon, that's not the explanation you're going to give unless you want to scare the bejesus out of people. You know, if you are testing a weapon, you're going to do what I say. Well, every decade we have all kinds of animals dropping dead. It's just the media is so encompassing now that everything goes viral. And it's just, and I would show you all kinds of historic examples, say, you know, it's a mystery. You know, these things do happen. We don't really have a rational explanation sometimes every time something or someone drops dead. But for the bye-bye blackbirds, they drop dead and they come out with fireworks and everyone scratches their head. And of course, this type of explanation does not do anything to quiet it down, does it? Everyone keeps talking about it, which creates more fear, more anxiety. It is, it's as if someone's psychologically prepping the population. I mean, that's what you'd do. You would have to psychologically prep the population. The question that I get asked is the psychological aspects I can understand. That's blatantly obvious to me. That's not what you're going to tell the average person, even the above average person, to get them to shut up about it. That's what you're going to, when you say something like fireworks, all you're doing is having them talk about it. People that don't know about it are going to find out about it because it doesn't make sense to anyone. You know, there's not a rational explanation that's going to cover up anything. It's an irrational explanation that is designed to get them talking more and more and get more fear and more anxiety. Why would you do something like that? Well, if you plan on doing that on a mass scale, that's what you'd want. You'd want them psychologically prepared for a lot of accidental deaths or a lot of mayhem just in the blink of an eye because this happened extremely quickly. And I'll go on to answer some questions about it because this has went all over the globe. It was on Huffington Post. You know, there was statements, more than 1,000 birds drop, the birds fall from the sky, and everyone's saying it, more likely HAARP scalar EM weapon testing. And it's all the same stuff. It's all the same stuff. But we're going to talk about templates. We're going to talk about electromagnetic weapons. We're going to talk about some different theories on this, all speculative. It's all speculative until bye-bye blackbird happens and everything drops dead around you one morning. We'll talk about how this thing is done, but these are topics that my listeners have heard of before. We're going to talk about resonance. We're going to talk about the frequency at which everything in the universe vibrates. Everything in the universe has resonance. Resonance is the frequency at which whatever you're looking at is going to vibrate. A brick has a frequency at which it's going to vibrate. Every cell in your body, cancer, believe it or not, has a resonance. It has a frequency at which it vibrates. A healthy cell has a resonance. Everything in the universe vibrates. Everything in the universe vibrates at a particular frequency. And we're going to talk about this, and I'm going to alert you to a particular video with a very good explanation. We're going to talk about templates first. A template of action is simply when you create an interference pattern of two or more electronic waves that go together to create an overlapping pattern, a grid. And of course, that is a very simple explanation. On my Twitter, you're going to find a great explanation about something very speculative from the past. There was a time in the past, in the Cold War, when the famous Lieutenant Colonel Tom Bearden speculated that the Russians had mastered the template for inducing cancer. And in this particular video, you're going to have Dr. Joseph P. Farrell, who explains this stuff very well, explaining templates, explaining how EM weapons, a basic overview of one particular angle of how something like this would be done. But basically, and I'd like you to watch the video because it's a good introduction to templates. It sounds simple. Two or more interfering electromagnetic waves that come together to create an overlapping pattern. You can do anything you want to with it. And so in theory, if blackbirds, red-winged blackbirds, had a different resonance than other birds, if let's say that the blackbirds had a different resonance, they're vibrating at a different frequency, it would be pretty straightforward. You create a template, an interference pattern by two or more electromagnetic waves, and just zap them. just zap them and kill them, basically. Bye-bye Blackbird. Final solution with no air pollution on blackbirds. That is a simple way to go about it, but there are way more complicated ways. You know, as long as there's... This is the type of thing that I've been having a great deal of fun with, because you have a lot of speculation on this stuff behind the scenes. You know, sooner or later, they're going to start coming out with things. And what I always say is, well, there's really nothing to worry about, because all races are equal, all races bleed red, all races descend from Lucy. There's speculation of them zapping humans. You know, bye-bye Blackbird for real. You know, there's a famous racist song called Bye-Bye Blackbird. And there's speculation over this. Do they have it for different races? There's always been speculation over race-based weapon. But going about it through chemicals and whatnot is really messy. There's a much simpler way, if it could be done, if you create a template, if there is differences. But what I always say is, we're all the same, right? I mean, all my life, they've told us that all rabbits are equal. All rabbits descend from Lucy, the monkey in Africa 5 million years ago. All rabbits descend from Adam and Eve, rabbit. All rabbits bleed red. All rabbits are perfectly identical. There's no such thing as race-based medicine. There's no such thing as skeletal differences. There are no differences in the races. And because there are no differences in the races, you really have nothing to worry about, right? This is my patented explanation. And when everything keeps dropping dead, what I've been saying is, well, it must have been the fireworks. You know, well, do I think they're going to use this again? Well, all races are equal, right? I mean, I've been brainwashed with that my whole entire life. You know, they say this in white countries and only white countries. They try to hammer white children with this. It's basically race-based warfare against white children. But they don't really talk about that. But this is my patented explanation. It's starting to get some parties really scared. Well, you know, if there are differences in races, you need to come out with them being more honest. I mean, every week on AMRIN, American Renaissance, they come out with some new race-based medicine. Why? Because there are differences. Now, the question you're asking me is, could these differences be exploited by electromagnetic weapons? Well, yes. Yes, they could be. Yes, they could be, in theory. We won't know about it until you go bye-bye Blackbird. But my patented response is always, well, there's no such thing as race, so that's impossible. I mean, you can't say bye-bye Blackbird because you'd kill all the rabbits in the area, right? And you could do that as well with phase conjugate howitzers or Tesla howitzers. You could kill everything in the area, a Tunguska. You know, just zap everything in the area. But there are much more diabolical ways to go about it if you wanted to go about it. But, of course, all that's impossible because there's no such thing as race, right? You know, there's some parties getting nervous on this planet. But if you had the template, if you had the grading for the difference, if you could design the grading pattern, and I'll put up a video, a great explanation of how it was theorized of turning cancerous cells into healthy cells and the healthy cells into cancerous cells. It's pretty wild stuff, but it's pretty straightforward, actually. It kind of makes sense on a certain level, but this is something that it's another type of stealth technology where the Green Goddess is going to be stealth on it until it's too late for anyone to do anything. So to my Asian listeners, I have no idea. My particular opinion on scalar EM weapons, torsion weapons, is like a Christmas party where there is about a dozen planets, a dozen countries, dozen countries / groups, including Japan, that have a variety of little goodies, a variety of little torsion presents underneath that tree, a variety of little scalar presents underneath that tree. But someone out there, and I know her name, her name's Godzilla, she has all the presents, she has the tree decorated, she has the Christmas party going, she has a picture of herself as a little star on top of the tree, she has the turkey dinner laid out on the table, and she has the front of the house decorated. She has all the goodies and has them all linked up on some level. Now, whether it's covert, overt, I don't know. Whether it's through Germanic fraternal structures, most likely. Whether it's through, you know, who knows? Who knows? Could they link up heart fields and just deliver a knockout blow? Absolutely, if you have the templates. You know, chemical, race-based weapons and stuff like that, that's ugly stuff. There's much, much more easier ways to do about it, but all that's impossible because there's no such thing as race. And since there's no such thing as race, there would be nothing to exploit. You'd have to kill all the life on the planet. On the other hand, if there is such thing as, you know, all birds aren't equal and the blackbirds are feasting on the little white turtle doves and the cardinals are screwing over the cardinals and are raping and murdering and killing the blue jays and everything else, well, those birds get together, it's bye-bye blackbird. Whack! But of course that's impossible because all birds are equal. Now, if you're talking about differences are so out there as they resonate, they have a different resonance, they vibrate at a different frequency, I think it'd be pretty straightforward. it'd be pretty straightforward. But there's a lot of speculation, but it's reasonable speculation because sooner or later they're going to show it to you. If they're showing you a torsion type field put up over Norway, and that's the simplest explanation. The simplest explanation is the easiest. There's a patent on it going to 1983. His name's Eastman. It has to do with the Hart fields in America. So there's a simple explanation for this stuff. There's a type of physics that they haven't unveiled to the public. One of the reasons is this physics is all so encompassing. It's a game changer. It's also a great equalizer for white rabbits. In my opinion, you can't have haves and have-nots with this physics. You're not going to have different tiers of internet access. It covers everything. You're not going to have some people going without healthcare. It doesn't make any sense. It's such a game changer. One of the challenges with it is it's such a game changer that everyone would have the equivalent of their own little nuclear power plant on their house or something like that. And you really got to watch it because, you know, someone may put up something, or some good old boy may put up something on Tennessee and decide to wage a Hatfield-McCoy's war once again in the 21st century and blow up the whole state. And that can happen with white rabbits. We go at it. So you really got to watch how you bring the stuff out, and I think that's been a big dilemma, but it's a great equalizer because it changes everything we know across the board overnight. But do I think, it is highly speculative. And I'll put up a video where Dr. Farrell talks about this is how it would be done, but it's all speculation. Lieutenant Colonel Tom Bearden has been at the forefront of speculation. Tesla was at the forefront of doing things. They talk about the Tunguska, that the accident in Siberia, being Tesla putting on a demonstration of a Tesla howitzer, which would be a phase conjugate howitzer. You wouldn't be some particle beam. You're dealing with nonlinear stuff. It's just you pick a grid on the map and just zap it. Again, it's speculative until you go bye-bye Blackbird. But my patented response when all these, and we have this all the time in America over the past year, we've had animals drop dead, large groups of it. What I think about, it's fireworks. Do you think it's possible they could be doing this to humans? No, because all races are equal. You'd have to kill everyone, right? So that's my patented response. Sooner or later, when you're lying to the universe and you're lying to the universe to try to kill white rabbits, sooner or later the universe is going to catch up with you. And the Green Goddess is going to come out with her famous song for the 21st century. And it may be bye bye Blackbird, bye bye Speckly Brown Bird, bye bye whatever she doesn't like. You know, lying by, hopefully it'll be bye bye Pink Rabbit first. It is speculative, but it's the going thing. I mean, these explanations even end up on Huffington Post. Huffington Post is a big liberal. It's a lot of speculation, but I think it's kind of funny because these weapons would not be doable unless race is real. It's kind of funny, you know. So you're kind of between a rock and Godzilla. And that's not a good place to be in, but whatever. But I think a lot of countries have them. A lot of countries have variations. I have no doubt in my mind that Israelis have got a hold of something, all kinds of crazy stuff to use on Arabs because Israelis are nuts. I only know who did the first testing on this torsion type stuff, and that is, goes back to, the 30s, Germany, and the Glock. And we'll keep this conversation alive. And in the next segment, I'm going to go into speculation on Phobos Deimos. I'm going to talk about some legitimate Western mysteries. And we're going to talk about the moon. It's kind of interesting stuff. There's a movie coming out. And the movie, I'm going to come back to this in the end. And I'm going to talk about Transformers. And we're going to talk about torsion. We're going to talk about this physics again, torsion physics. We're going to talk about the Great Pyramid. We're going to talk about Transformers. But there's a new Transformers coming out. It's actually going to play in theaters first in Egypt. And it's about two sides, the Decepticons and the Autobots. And the Decepticons and the Autobots are basically in a race to get to the dark side of the moon, because the dark side of the moon creates relics toward a huge ancient space war between the Autobots and the Decepticons. It goes back to their first war. I'm going to get back to this in the end, but it's fascinating stuff when you get into the dark side of the moon, all the different stuff coming down popular culture. We're going to talk about it in a unique way, but there are some legitimate mysteries as well when it comes to the South Pole of the moon. And then in the end, we'll go into Phobos Deimos, then the moon, and then in the end, I'm going to talk about the pyramid. I'm going to answer some more questions or at least put you on the path of where the truth goes. But when it comes to EM weapons, scalar weapons, phase conjugate howitzers, Tesla howitzers, bye-bye Blackbird, we won't see it until it's too late. You know, Saddam Hussein didn't see the stealth bomber until he's getting laid open by them. That's just how we operate. even when we don't know we're operating like that. Now, do I think they've linked up Hartfields? I don't. I know that the Russians and the Germans have. I'll bet money on it. Do I think there's, you know, I've been asked this question about master templates. The rumor is that a template to grab a hold of other Hartfields. That's wild stuff. The only ones capable of doing that are the Germans simply because they're so ahead of the curve. They're so ahead of the curve, and they have a perfectly unified physics. Or at least that's what the rumor is. The rumor is the Germans have a perfectly unified physics. And I'm going to tell you a funny story about this. In the end, we're going to end it on a famous story about the Glock, or the Bell, this thing you see dancing around the Discovery Channel. Or actually something that's actually true. But I don't know if they have all the Hartfields linked. We wouldn't know about master templates until well after the fact. I do know that the Pink Rabbit Elitesters have been bent over the barrel. If they have deserted the other side, and we'll find out. It'll be obvious that something's gone wrong. It'll be overwhelmingly obvious at the war. But if that's true, then they would have linked up the Hartfields. Now, whether or not the Germans have some master template that can grab other Hartfields and stuff, you start talking about some wild stuff. But there is another way they could be covertly linked too, fraternal organizations. What you think of as secret societies, which are the worst kept secret on the planet. But there's a variety of different ways they could do it and not say it, just do it, and no one would know about it. But that would go to breaking Team Pink Rabbit over the barrel. You know, the Germans still have a base, the Luftwaffe base over in the out west in America. So who knows? Who knows? They're buying up stock exchanges, so it looks to be pretty straightforward to me. But we'll see when it happens. We'll see when it happens. But, you know, move along here, folks. Nothing to see. It's just fireworks. You know, it's just fireworks. All races are equal. There's no such thing as race, so all this is impossible, right? You know, so every time a bunch of stuff drops dead, my patent response is, no, it was fireworks. Roman candles, bottle rockets. What are you looking at? You know, nothing to see. Move along. I have no idea, though. But sooner or later, we're going to be seeing it. And this is the type of things that we're going to see ahead of time. And we'll come back to this in the end. And now a word from our sponsors. Horace, what can I buy to become the life of the party besides the Undercover Lover t-shirt? That is a question we always get asked. Well, you can always get yourself an Undercover Lover or a Green Goddess or a White Rabbit Radio beer stein. Yes, they've been reported to magically fill up on their own. Yeah, parties are just reported to overflow with beer. It's amazing. Amazing product, all for the very low cost of $23.99. Yes, and if you have problems getting up in the morning, you can always get yourself a White Rabbit Radio, Green Goddess, or Undercover Lover coffee mug. It'll help you wake up faster. Yeah, this stuff is reported to work very, very well. And those are all for the low price of $15. And all the proceeds go to support our servers. So if you're having problems becoming the life of the party, get yourself a beer stein. If you're having problems getting up in the morning, well, put yours truly in front of you. In front of you as you drink your morning coffee. And now back to our regular programming. We're going to talk about one of the more legitimate mysteries of Western civilization. And this is something no one really has any explanation for as of yet. And answer some questions regarding my particular views of Mars. And Mars has a great deal of mystery to it because it's always regarded as a planet of war. The god of war. And war, of course, is a very human activity. And what's even more mysterious about Mars is all the attention the little moonlets get. It has these little moonlets, Phobos and Deimos. And the Phobos has come under an increasing amount of attention from the European Space Agency. But let's go over when exactly they were discovered, because that's where the mystery actually begins. Phobos was discovered by an astronomer, A.S.F. Hall, on August 18, 1877, at the United States Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C. And that's where the first problems come in. What I'm going to do is I'm going to put up something from solarviews.com. It's on the dwarf planet Ceres. And all during the 1800s, the telescopes became more high-tech. 76 years prior to the founding of Phobos, Ceres was discovered by an astronomer, Giuseppe Piazzi, a monk in Sicily. And it was a founding director of the Palermo Astronomical Observatory. And Ceres was found within a gap between Mars and Jupiter. And Ceres is a dwarf planet. It's not that easy to see, but at the time, telescope technology was really coming up to speed. And, of course, all during this time, if you look back, you're going to have a great deal of discoveries from the late 1700s. Let's see, Uranus was discovered in 1781, all up until the time of, let's say, Phobos and Deimos were discovered, 1877. A lot is going on during that 100-year period in astronomy because telescopes were becoming more powerful. They could see more. But here you have Giuseppe Piazzi looking between Mars and a gap between Mars and Jupiter in 1801, and he finds Ceres. You have all this stuff going on, and I want you to read this piece. It'll be up on my Twitter. You're going to find out all about how even the word asteroid came up, because at the time an argument was going on whether or not these little planets they were finding were planets or whether they're asteroids. They were seeing asteroids. That's how high tech. That's how good. That's how great. Telescope technology was in the early 1800s, early 19th century. But Phobos was not found until 1877. So you had basically 70-some years of serious telescope technology coming out. You have Giuseppe Piazzi finding Ceres, looking between Mars and Jupiter. Everyone is always looking at Mars because Mars is a big deal in our history and many other histories. You have the Japanese astronomers at the time looking at it. You have all these different people looking at all these different planets for like 100 years before they find Phobos and Deimos. You know, one morning Asaph Hall is working in 1877 and he just ups and finds Phobos and Deimos, these two little moonlets circling in orbit around Mars, and it became a pretty big deal based on a few simple facts. You know, why did it take them so long to find them? And that's a question no one can answer, because they're all looking at Mars. I mean, back in 1801, again, they are standing, Giuseppe Piazzi sitting there looking at 1801 all around the Mars Jupiter, the gap between Mars and Jupiter, to find, actually to find little Ceres, this little dwarf planet. But if you read the piece I put up, you're going to see something quite odd. They should have found them long before they did. Now, under conventional wisdom, they should have probably been found somewhere in 1860 with this new observatory. That's what the actual scientists say. They should have been able to find them earlier. But in reality, it should have been a lot before, a lot earlier in 1860. And there are two dominant theories about why they didn't find Phobos and Deimos. The first one is that there was a global, worldwide conspiracy to conceal them. Some people actually believe that. You know, that they're all looking at Mars, they're just not telling us Phobos is there because there was a global conspiracy from the Japanese, all the different astronomers who were, you know, getting all these high-tech telescopes for 100 years, there was just a global conspiracy not to tell us about them. And there's another rational explanation that isn't so rational, really, under our science these days, and that would be that they weren't there. The reason that Giuseppe Piazzi found Ceres and is staring at Mars, but yet he can't find Phobos or Deimos would be a whole lot easier to see to most astronomers. The reason that he didn't find it is because they weren't there. How could they not be there? Well, someone put them there in 1877 or around about that time. Someone flew them there, or they landed there, or they showed up there. But there's only two rational explanations. Either someone's hiding this, and you can read the article, you can do your homework and find all the discoveries for 100 years. And then all of a sudden someone says, well, here's Phobos and Deimos. You know, here's these two little moonlets. You know, all of a sudden they just show up there. They just pop up and everyone can see them all of a sudden. For 100 years no one's seeing them, then all of a sudden you can see them. There's not really a rational explanation. Either they were hiding them, someone didn't want to tell the world about them, all these astronomers were in some big conspiracy theory, and some people actually believe that, or they just showed up there. Frankly, I don't know which is true, but there's a lot of odd stuff with it, and that's where it becomes, that is just a warm-up act. What's even odder yet among the two little moonlets circling Mars is that there was a book that came out 150 years prior at least, called Gulliver's Travels. Most of you have heard of it, I'm guessing, especially my white listeners. All the white rabbits heard of Gulliver's Travels and probably have read it. It came out in 1726 and was amended according to Wikipedia in 1735. It's a novel by an Anglo-Irish writer and clergyman named Jonathan Swift. And in Gulliver's Travel in 1726, he makes a point of saying Mars has two moons. Two moons. So we have Jonathan Swift in Western Civilization, a great epic, Gulliver's Travels, saying Mars has two moons, alluding to Mars has two moons. We have a famous astronomer who finds Ceres, Giuseppe Piazzi, in 1801. Then we have Phobos and Deimos show up, and they find it in 1877, Asaph Hall, in the United States Naval Observatory, Washington, D.C. We have Gulliver's Travel back in 1726, talking about Mars having two moons, but they aren't discovered until Asaph Hall discovers them on August 18th, 1877, 150 years later, 151 years later. Very, very odd. And no one really has an explanation for it. It's a legitimate mystery in Western civilization. And this is how the Richard Hoaglands make their money. This is why people talk about them, that there are legitimate mysteries to point out. And when it comes to Phobos and Deimos, especially Phobos, I would have to hand it that they're on to something, because according to the European Space Agency, Phobos has some odd things going on with it that has even made the Wikipedia. The first odd thing going on with it is that it's leaking. Yeah, it's leaking. What is it leaking? Well, they use the term outgassing. It means something's under pressure inside leaking out. We don't really know what it's leaking. It's just Phobos is leaking something. Very strange, very odd. And that's the second thing that's pretty odd about it that the world found out, is that it's somewhere in the area of 40% hollow. It's a little hollow moon that's leaking. Moons aren't supposed to be hollow, and they're not supposed to be leaking. Or outgassing, as they say. Very strange. Very strange stuff. And they've gotten a big tiff, which was kind of odd. I've been asked about this. European Space Agency got into a big fight. Richard Hoagland is always writing about this stuff. You know, he saw the face on Mars. I can't see it, but that's not my specialty. That doesn't mean it's there. It means probably the direct opposite. He's probably right on something. But the European Space Agency picked a fight with Richard Hoagland over his views on Phobos, which I found extremely strange. Because the European Space Agency has put out all kinds of wild facts on Phobos. They've released pictures which look strange to most. To most people look strange. It's in a very strange orbit. Everything about the thing is just strange. The discovery, everything, just speaks to mystery. But they released Phobos showing a lot of different right angles and stuff like that. Right angles can exist somewhat in nature. They just don't exist a lot. And there are a lot of strange things with it. I'll give Richard Hoagland credit. But Richard Hoagland has to be on to something in regarding Phobos for one reason alone. The ESA attacked him. Why would they attack him? Why wouldn't they just sit silent about it? If I didn't want to bring attention to something he was saying, I would just sit silent. I would say nothing. But the fact that they attack him tells me that he might be on to something. You know, he's always talking about they're going to make big disclosures regarding this solar system and stuff like that. Richard Hoagland has said this for years, decades. And eventually he's probably going to be right on something. That's just, you know, I mean, he's white. He's going to find the truth eventually, if he's looking for it. But the fact that they attacked him is quite, the answer would be quite simple. The answer would be quite simple. He's on to something. Now, what he's on to, I don't know. It's a mystery. It's a mystery. Do I think it's Noah's Ark or something? I have no idea. There's something up with it, though. I'm willing to say there's something up with it. There's too many odd things going on with the thing. Too many things that even they're admitting to. I mean, you can't have a moon leaking, and you have a hollow moon. What is it? What is there? You know, what's in there? Buzz Aldrin had said we need to get back there. There's something crazy going on there. He said that on Fox News. So there's a couple different characters involved in saying this, but Richard Hoagland was first and foremost, and the ESA released some crazy information about it. that someone like him latched onto and wrote some different reports. And you can go to his website, Enterprise Mission, and read his Phobos reports. The Gulliver's Travel, Jonathan Swift stuff. It's all very strange, very, very strange stuff. So that's one of the reasons why would the ESA... You're not going to pick a fight if you're a legitimate, the European Space Agency is not going to pick a fight with an alternative news and researcher unless they want to call attention to them. And you're obviously not going to agree with them, because agreeing with them, you'll say, well, that guy's crazy. You know, you're agreeing with them face on Mars. What are you agreeing to? You're not going to agree to him. You're just going to call you're going to pick a fight with him and call attention to something he's saying. So he's clearly onto something about it. What he's onto, I just don't know. But the facts behind Phobos and Deimos are very strange. The naming itself was very, very interesting, especially to listeners of my show and especially myself. This was the most interesting part. They were suggested by a man named Henry Madden, and he was the science master of Eton. And the names are right out of Book 15 of the Iliad. If you ever read the Iliad, Homer's Iliad, in which the god Ares summons dread, which is Deimos, and fear, which is Phobos. This is where Ares kinds of get into it with Zeus. They start getting into it with Zeus. Ares, of course, in the Babylonian tradition is Nergal. He's a god of war. He's pretty dark character. He's a serious warlord. At least that's the way most translate it. Most go across the spectrum, like we do on this podcast about linking up Greek gods with others. But Ares summons dread, and fear. Deimos and Phobos in Book 15 of the Iliad, which is fascinating stuff. I'll put up Book 15 of the Iliad. You can read it online. I'm not crazy about this translation online. The wonderful thing about the Iliad and the Odyssey is you can actually buy them on used bookstores online for like 99 cents. And there's some good translations. This translation I'm going to put up online, those of you that don't want to buy the book can read Book 15. But that's what it's named after, which is kind of strange in itself, isn't it? You got the planet of war, the god of war, Mars, which goes back to Roman tradition, I believe. And you've got Ares, this whole entire reference to war, Deimos, Phobos, mysterious little moonlets, little planets. I think it's, what is it? It's 11 kilometers. It's 11 kilometers. And Phobos, of course, is seven times as large as Deimos. It is a fascinating thing. It's all fascinating stuff. 40%, it has basically a hollowed out cavity inside on some level. And of course, it's leaking. It's leaking something. Which of course, if something was pressurized, that's what it would mean. Something's pressurized inside on some level. Very strange stuff. It's a legitimate Western mystery that is shaping up. Where are they going with this Mars thing? Where is the ESA going with it? Well, they're calling attention to something Richard Hoagland has said, which is rather interesting in itself, because that's not something I would do unless he was right on something and I wanted the world to know about it. The ESA cannot come out and say anything like that. They've already said enough crazy stuff about Phobos and Deimos. But it is interesting. The orbit itself, which I can't, is fascinating. How they show up all of a sudden is fascinating. No one can really explain any of the stuff. How they were named. And it is quite a story behind the naming. I won't go into the whole entire thing because I don't quite understand all the different machinations involved. But that is something Richard Hoagland does do quite well. I'll give him credit for. He knows all about the naming of the planets and how they were named and the different controversies involved in the naming. Because all the planets are named after something in Western civilization, if you haven't noticed. But that's a legitimate mystery, and we're going to go on with a modern mystery. I'm going to talk about the moon. I'm going to talk about some what you see is what you get mysteries regarding the moon, and update something I talked about before about NASA firing a missile into the moon. We're going to talk about that in the next episode. But Phobos and Deimos, keep your eyes on the information regarding Phobos and Deimos. I don't know where they're going with this one, but someone's going somewhere. This podcast is always done real time, so sometimes I talk about events that people want me to talk about again or updates on things. I've talked about, during a podcast long ago, I talked about when NASA was firing a missile into the moon to see if there was water. And I was asked about the whole story behind it and what's going on with the moon. And if you know anything about alternative news and research, they make their money off legitimate myths and mysteries. I've already talked briefly about Phobos and Deimos, and no one can really explain it. It's a legitimate Western mystery, or global mystery, or solar system-wide mystery, whatever you want to say about it. But it's by and large Western, in my opinion. And this stuff with the moon has also become somewhat mysterious on what happened afterwards and the whole thing leading into it. But we'll go into that, and I have to go back in time to 1994 and talk about the events that preceded NASA firing a missile into the south side of the moon. There's a great deal of mystery regarding the moon, and of course we've talked about, in the previous podcast, I touched on a movie, Iron Sky, that deals with a Nazi moon base, and it is a competing mythos now. Start talking about moon bases and alien moon bases and Nazi moon bases. It is a total competing mythos for another mythos. And that is Roswell, or an extension of that mythos. And we've talked about this in a variety of different ways, and you would have to listen to the previous podcast to get my whole entire view on that. But when it comes to the moon, there are some legitimate questions, some legitimate mysteries, legitimate questions that no one is answering. No one's coming forward to answer. And we're going to talk about where this all began, where these questions began. And these are legitimate facts. Back in 1994, the Naval Research Laboratory was a major contractor to a particular spacecraft. And the spacecraft was the Deep Space Program Science Experiment, DSPSE. This was in 1994. It was launched on January 25th, 1994. And it was a joint project that got some attention. It was between NASA and BMDO, what you think of as Ballistic Missile Defense Organization. And basically it was called, there's a code word for it, there's a short word for it, it was called Clementine. It was basically a satellite that was going up to map the moon. And we're not talking about just map the moon, because they had already mapped the moon. That's where the questions came in. They already mapped the moon. They had extensive maps of the moon. NASA had all kinds of extensive maps of the moon. But the Ballistic Missile Defense Organization and the Naval Research Laboratory wanted serious maps of the moon. How serious? Well, let's go over it. It had a UV visible camera, a near-infrared camera, a long wavelength infrared camera, a high-resolution camera, two star tracker cameras, a laser altimeter, and a charged particle telescope. An S-band transponder was used for communications, tracking, and gravimetry experiment. And the project was named Clementine after the song Oh My Darling Clementine, obviously. And it was kind of a head scratcher on why they were doing all this. And the charged particle telescope was there to measure the flux of spectra of energetic protons and electrons. The ultraviolet visible camera was most interesting. They were studying the moon and 1620 geographos at five different wavelengths in the ultraviolet spectrum. They were looking at another spectrum that we cannot see, ultraviolet. We can't see ultraviolet light. Yes, all you white rabbits have been sunburned, because ultraviolet light means something. But we can't see it. There's a lot of things in this universe we can't see. We don't see light. We see light reflecting off things, and we can't see certain spectrums like ultraviolet. But they were looking at it. There was also a near-infrared CCD camera, and that was the study of the moon and this N1620 geographos at six different wavelengths in the near-infrared spectrum. So they were looking at another spectrum. They're looking at all these different spectrums. Kind of wild stuff. High-resolution camera, they were studying certain portions of the moon, namely the south side of the moon. They were studying this big, I guess it was ice cap, and there are pictures of it. You can actually see the Clementine lunar map, and I will put a lot of this up on my Twitter for you. You can read about it. But it was a head-scratcher on why the hell would the Ballistic Missile Defense Organization want to study the moon? It had already been mapped. Why all this extensive mapping, and why all this ultraviolet camera, all this ultraviolet pictures, which of course we can't see. We can see one of the Clementine Lunar Map 2.0, the extensive mapping they did, but I can't really make up anything of it. It just looks like the moon. But all this other stuff they were doing, all these experiments. And this went on, I'm guessing, till around 96 or whenever it came back. And nothing really was made of it. Nothing really was made of it until I was actually making this podcast, and it would have been, actually, I guess, in late 2009. LCROSS was launched on June 18, 2009. So sometime in the fall, they were talking about this LCROSS. And I'm going to go over LCROSS with you, and then we'll tie it in together. But basically, the basic overview was the Ballistic Missile Defense Organization got together with NASA, and they launched a satellite to map the moon. And we're not talking about map the moon. They were mapping the moon in other spectrums. They were doing all kinds of different experiments, looking for something or why the Ballistic Missile Defense Organization were going to do that. Why were they interested in this? Well, it's quite common sense now, in hindsight. Hindsight vision is always 20/20. It always, and it lends itself to the truth. And we got to talk about LCROSS. LCROSS happened real time while this podcast was coming out. And it was something that we haven't pondered until they fired a missile. LCROSS was going back to the moon. And it got some attention. It got some attention because what do you get when you cross four L's? Well, if you cross four L's, you get a swastika. Well, it got some attention by its name alone. Its name alone was a head scratcher. So you have this mission LCROSS going into the to fire something in the south side of the moon to see their water. Well, there's a polar ice cap there, and they already knew there was water there. They knew there was water there long, long before. They knew there's water on the moon. So you have an experiment to see if there's a water on the moon, and they're seeing the water. They're going to see if there's water on the moon by firing a massive projectile into the south side of the moon, the south pole. And this becomes somewhat of a head scratcher on why they were doing this, why they were firing an actual missile, a projectile, a missile into the south pole of the moon. To see if there's water, which they already know about. Well, it goes back to the Ballistic Missile Defense Organization in Clementine. They were studying the south pole of the moon. They were studying the ice caps. Now, why the Ballistic Missile Defense Organization were interested in this? Why the Naval Laboratory? Why not just NASA interested in remapping the moon? Well, we really don't know. We really don't know. But what we do know is that they fired a missile into the place. They fired a missile into a particular area that they wanted to fire a missile into, supposedly to find water, which they already knew was there. And we were supposed to be able to watch everything. Well, we couldn't watch anything. You couldn't really see anything. They fired it and a big dust cloud came up, which was rather odd. But we do know there's a big ice cap there. That's what we know to be true. And we know that the Ballistic Missile Defense Organization, the Naval Laboratories, took an interest in the moon back in the 90s. We know that that someone fired a missile into the moon, and the reason they gave us was they were looking for water. Looking for water, which they already knew about. And so the name LCROSS kind of got on a lot of people's nerves, like, what the hell are they really doing? What are they covering up for? And it goes back to Clementine. What were they really looking for then? And we don't really know. You know, it is all speculation. But what we do know, because it was measured by several different groups, and this is the interesting thing about the dust cloud they blew up. It blew up this huge dust cloud. Anytime you fire a projectile from outer space into a planet, you're gonna put up a serious dust cloud. But the dust cloud they blew up was most unique because it was measured, the different elements of it were measured by several different groups. There was no way to hide it. There was no way to hide it, the actual makeup of the dust cloud. And it was just wild. All these different minerals that weren't even supposed to be present on the moon. But what was even crazier was the tons and tons of mercury blown up. This whole entire dust cloud, up to 20 to somewhere between 19 and 22% of the dust cloud was mercury. And this, of course, is known for a fact now. We know it for a scientific fact how many tons of mercury LCROSS blew up into this big dust cloud. And that, of course, started ringing bells, literally. Anytime you hear about a lot of mercury, it always rings a bell. Why is that? Well, let me talk about a current event, and let me go over to Norway right now. Right this minute in Norway, we have an interesting incident. There is a U-boat. Yeah, a German U-boat. A German, the Luftwaffe. It's a U-boat, precisely U-864. It's downed in the waters of Norway. And what does this have to do with the moon? Well, we're going to get to that in a minute. But the Ministry of Fish and Coastal, her name is Helga Petersen, has stirred up a storm. She's going to raise the U-boat. They have to raise the U-boat. Or they have to encase it in cement, which is pretty expensive as well. Why do they have to do this? Because the U-boat's cargo is leaking tons of mercury. You see, the Nazis were involved, the Germans were involved in a serious project. The project was labeled War Decisive. It's called the Glock, or the Bell. You see it on the Discovery Channel, you see it on the History Channel. I've told you what it does. I've sent you in a direction on what it does. It's a lot of speculation. All we know is the direction. All I can send you down is the direction on this stuff. But one thing we do know is that's what all the mercury was for. All the mercury was for this next generation physics they were experimenting on. Fascinating stuff. But anytime you hear about large amounts of mercury, it's always going to ring a bell. It doesn't matter whether it's on a U-boat, and there's been several U-boats that have had mercury on it. But right now, Helga Petersen has to make a decision, and they don't want to raise it because all the different German veteran organizations, all the different organizations, the different memorial groups are raising holy hell because you're not supposed to raise an iron coffin. They're going to encase it in cement, I believe. So it stops leaking mercury into the water. So when this big dust cloud blew up on the moon, they looked at the makeup of the dust cloud, and it's 20% mercury. Well, there's no way in hell the moon, as we know it, can kick up that type of dust cloud. Unless everything we know about the moon has to go out the window for it to be able to do for this to happen. There's all kinds of rare minerals, all kinds of rare elements, all these crazy things in this dust cloud, but this 20% mercury. And so it gets everyone talking. What the hell is up there? What are we missing here? Even scientists are saying it because this is totally impossible based on everything that the NASA has told us about the moon. And there are many other governments from India to China. All these people racing to the moon now. What is going on the moon? What is up there that they're not telling us, because this is totally impossible? There has to be some type of either the geology of the moon is totally different than from what we've led to believe, or something else is going on. And I really can't explain it, but I can tell you why the big brouhaha over the mercury. They've got all these U-boats around the planet sunken, leaking mercury. They're encasing one in cement in Norway, or having to raise it because it's leaking mercury. And you'll see this on the Discovery Channel History Channel. Anytime you hear a large amount of mercury, everyone immediately thinks Germany. and white rabbit physics. And so now you got a big dust cloud on the moon with 20% mercury, just tons and tons of mercury kicked up. And no one knows why. Why are they going? Why did they target the south side of the moon to see if there was water? Well, they should have given a better explanation, because they already knew there was water. Why did Clementine go up there? Why the Ballistic Missile Defense Organization? What is these Anglo-American elites not telling us? What are these Jew rabbits, the Jew rabbit elites not telling us? We don't know. It's a mystery, but it's a legitimate scientific mystery. It's a legitimate scientific question, just like Phobos and Deimos. It's a legitimate head-scratcher. I don't know, but that's one of the reasons this the Nazi moon-based mythos and the movie Iron Sky, one of the reasons it's got some attention. The attention, of course, has created quite a bit of quiet around the... the film was getting a lot of attention, but they've quieted it down, and that's one of the reasons Dr. Farrell is probably not asked on a lot of speaking trips, because he gives his particular opinion on this, and it is a competing mythos now. What I call a competing mythos, at least. I don't really know what to make of it, but it is ripe for speculation, legitimate speculation. Now, to answer the questions... could they have built something like that? That once you go into this line of speculation, and to do it correctly, to understand everything I say about it, you're going to have to listen to this whole entire podcast, because it's impossible for me to do in a few sound bites. But to tell you, if you believe something like that exists, I wouldn't believe they'd built it at all. You would have to go into the scenario that they believed in, the ancient cosmic war, this ancient war that happened in the solar system. that elements of this civilization were left on a handful of different places, namely Earth, Moon, Mars, Saturn's moon Titan. Something like the Moon, there could be an old base there from this group that they just walked in and turned the lights on. I don't think they'd built anything. That would be the scenario you're going down. Of course, the flaw is going down that scenario because, you know, you got these little Nazis that email me, why aren't they here yet? They believe it. Well, you'd have to understand that once you go down this scenario, this cosmic war scenario that the good Dr. Farrell goes down, there's something that he knows that's an automatic given, and that would be there would have to be something here with us now, and that's the reason they're not here right now. You'd have to get up there, hide there, and wait for the cavalry or something like that. The cavalry, and the cavalry would be coming. But that is the line of thinking. Now, is there anything in this ancient text that would preclude to be there? Yes, it's all over the place. There would have to be stuff on the moon. Now, what does that mean? I don't know. I'm agnostic. I don't really know what I believe until it shows up here. But once it shows up here, there's a whole set of if-thens you better know. If the red hippo comes out, well, then we'll already know. But they're usually one step ahead of them. So who knows? Maybe they had a giant fake moon base up there. Maybe the red hippo thought they were up there, and they had a big supply of mercury up there just to dangle it in front of their noses. I have no idea. But it is legitimate. It's legitimate mystery. Legitimate being no one can offer a rational explanation for the Ballistic Missile Defense Organization to research it. And there is one semi-rational explanation. They want to test fire. They want to test fire space weapons, and they want to do it under the guise of searching for water and stuff like that. Well, I guess that's a legitimate explanation because you're really test firing a space weapon. They test fired a missile of a projectile from a satellite into an area. Obviously, if you can do something like that around Earth, you could dominate a lot of situations. You're not going to be able to stop that necessarily. Under current technology, at least. Under current known technology. That is the only semi-rational explanation. The problem you get into is if you're going to do something like that, why did they do all the particular mapping? Why are they targeting the South Pole, the polar ice cap in the South Pole? Why did Clementine target all this? Why did the Ballistic Missile Defense Organization want to target a precise area? Because there are other areas in the moon much more interesting that they could have fired it into. You see, this is the problem with that explanation, but that is a semi-plausible explanation that under the guise of science, they're testing new weapons. I'll buy that. I'll buy that somewhat, but the Clementine did some very odd things on the moon in some spectrums we can't see. It just becomes very odd on the route they took to do it. Very odd. And why they chose to do it at the time. It is all mystery. There is a semi-plausible explanation I can give you, scientific. Sneaky white rabbit military, pink rabbit military. That could be, but the particular site they chose does not make any sense. And, of course, the movie Iron Sky, which has gotten a lot of attention behind the scenes, talks about a Nazi moon base in the South Pole. And, of course, it's a myth. It's a competing mythos, but myths can be dangerous. Myths can be dangerous, especially for our race. But it is interesting. That's an update on it. That's a whole entire overview. I can give one possible plausible semi-rational explanation, but even that semi-rational explanation cannot explain the dust cloud that's 20% mercury. Everything you know about the moon has to fly out the window. Either we don't know, either they lied to us about something way back when, or there's something they're not telling us. Something's got to give. So even in a semi-rational explanation of testing new weapons, a space weapon that would be an ultimate weapon, firing a missile from space, a projectile, a hardened projectile, just to fire it into a target, you can't give a rational scientific explanation under what we know about the moon with all that mercury and everything. It just the 20% mercury cloud, whatever you want to call it, 19, 21%, the tons of mercury, doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense. Just like the mercury on the U-boat, it doesn't make any sense unless you know about the one project in all of Nazi Germany that was labeled war decisive. War decisive meaning if we get this done, we're going to win the war. No doubt. But that's all I can tell you about it. It's a legitimate mystery. I don't have any real solutions to this. So solutions are just coming. It's an act in process. It's an ongoing act as we come into the end game and all the mysteries that are just mounting up. But there are legitimate mysteries, and that's how alternative news and research, that's how they make their money. They've stoked some, especially their online media, they've stoked the natural, they brought back the natural myth and mysticism that makes up the white rabbit existence in a very peculiar way. Some of it's dangerous. The stuff controlled by our enemy is dangerous. Our enemy considers this Nazi esotericism extremely dangerous now that it's getting a little too uncomfortable for them. I don't consider anything that a young white rabbit has to believe, whether it be J.R.R. Tolkien or Miguel Serrano, which is one of the fathers of Nazi esotericism. I don't see that as all that dangerous if it motivates them to something higher or better than themselves. Our enemy understands that. That's why they don't like any competing mythos with their little gray alien mythos. And my race has a tendency to bring myths into life. It myths right out in front of the world and bring them to life. It doesn't matter whether it's a New York City skyscraper or stealth technology, something that was thought impossible, scientifically impossible. So I don't get into predicting white rabbit behavior. But that is the whole entire story about the big mystery of the moon. And that's the tip of the iceberg. That's a kind of a what you see is what you get, what is known. When you go into the Dick Hoaglands and what's up there in the glass bubbles, I don't know. I can't see anything about it. I don't really know anything. They accuse NASA of doctoring pictures. But to be honest with you, I've seen enough from my artists to know you can doctor pictures. So I that is possible. If there were defense reasons for it, they would doctor pictures. I don't know. I mean, these are just unknowns, legitimate mysteries, legitimate white rabbit ear scratchers. But we'll continue this conversation, and I'll go into something else fascinating next for you. And now a word from our sponsor. Have you ever said to yourself, "Gee, I would love an undercover lover," or maybe you said to yourself, "Gee, I would like to be an undercover lover"? We know exactly how you feel. For a limited time only, on WhiteRabbitRadio.net, you can buy an undercover lover. You can be an undercover lover. Yes, for only 25 carats. It is a great investment because all the money goes to fight white rabbit genocide, which is the thing we're about here at WhiteRabbitRadio.net. So if you're looking for an undercover lover, or if you're looking to be an undercover lover, or if you're just looking to have the coolest undercover lover in the history of the undercover lovers, we have just the ticket for you, all at a very, very low price. Yeah, so hop on over there and pull up that merchandise tab. And when you see the undercover lover, you'll go wild at how beautiful it is. And hit that buy button. Support fighting white rabbit genocide in the easiest way possible. Be an undercover lover. Now we're going to talk about de Glock. De Glock is an interesting subject. In this podcast, I've very simply went over the areas, and I would stress simplify. I simplified those areas. And I did that using Dr. Farrell's work, and I threw in another area. But with de Glock, or the bell, that bell-shaped thing you see dancing on the Discovery Channel that they offer all these ridiculous explanations for, they never have anyone good on television for, I put my listeners at least in the line, in the firing order of what they were trying to do with this thing, or what they have done. I was asked a particular question, and this is an interesting question, about de Glock, because you can wiki it. It's D, just like die in the English language, D-I-E, G-L-O-C-K-E, de Glock, and you can go right to the actual wiki. I'll put it on my Twitter if I think about it, but it's pretty simple. You can find out about it. You can look up the Venus flytrap that was called that by Igor Witkowski, I believe. But once the Berlin Wall came down, once things started opening up, there was a lot of research behind the Soviet lines of what the Nazis were doing over in some of the Soviet satellite countries. And that's where the main test rig for de Glock was located. Igor Witkowski in the 2000, just in the year 2000, wrote his book. It was in the Polish language, The Truth About the Wonder Weapon, and it was reprinted in German. And Dr. Farrell actually did a video with him. It's something that goes back quite a bit, and they believe the Kecksburg incident, you're going to see this Kecksburg incident, and others, especially the Dr. Farrells, have speculated that that's exactly what it was in Kecksburg. It's a famous, if you look up the Glock, you're going to see a lot of different things attached to it, but really people don't talk about, Dr. Farrell's the only one talking about it as a test rig specifically, and then he does so specifically on each one of the test phase. But of course that opens up a Pandora's box, whether you're testing it for 0 point energy, it's a test rig for a new type of physics. Whether you're testing it for a new type of energy, like a way to tap into 0 point energy to relieve all our energy needs. When you look at it for a weapons potential. When you look at this type of physics for a way to engineer the fabric of space-time itself. You're dealing with a torsion. You're dealing with a torsion test rig of sorts. Two counter-rotating drums around the famous Nazi serum, this red mercury-type substance. And it is all, it's become lore and legend and Nazi esoterica and everything else, but there's a lot of truth behind it, based on what they were saying and what's been done and what we're seeing unfolding on this planet to this day. But it was just a test rig. And when you're testing torsion, you're testing the spirally folding and pleating in the fabric of space-time itself, and they're doing a variety of different tests having to do with that. There's also a fourth thing they were doing with it, which goes a little bit out there, but I'm only going in a direction. Each one of these things could probably be a 12-part book series, and our Dr. Farrell will probably do 12-part book series on each one of these things. I went into a fourth area as well, and that has to do with what the National Socialists, what the Germans themselves believed, what they said they were doing, and it goes in that direction. I am just going in a direction because each one of these subject matters, it goes into a handful of different areas. You know, trying to predict what our race does is nearly impossible, in my opinion, is capable of doing. But anyways, I've talked about these things before, but to get to the actual question, why is it that the Nazis blew apart everything under the sun? They killed everyone having anything to do with this project. They executed all kinds of people having anything to do with it. This is the only project in all of National Socialist Germany labeled war decisive. It's a big deal. People want to know about it. That's why it's always on the Discovery Channel. But at the same time, we know what it looks like, and we know the test rig. You can go, Igor Witkowski in the video is sitting there in the book. They're at the test rig. You can find the Venus flytrap test rig. You can go there. You can hang out there. Why did they leave it into place, and why are they able to see this? You have a kind of contradiction. It's labeled war decisive. No one on TV is talking about what they're really doing with this stuff. Listeners of this podcast know the direction. They know the actual text. They know the guys at the forefront of the research, that's Dr. Joseph Farrell, of pointing it out. And of course I went into very explicit terms using very simple language on what they're doing. But why are they leaving this big test rig in place when they could easily blown it to hell? And why are they showing this thing on TV? And the answer is very simple. Just because it's labeled war decisive, sooner or later, they're going to want you to know what they did. They're going to want people to figure it out. They left it there for a particular reason. It brings questions. What are they doing with this? They're showing it on, you know, this thing, this object is very well known. It's very easy to research it. That's the funny thing about it. It's the only thing labeled war decisive. It's very easy to research because what they were doing is so mind-blowing, and that's what they said they were doing. I mean, everything they were doing is pretty mind-blowing, everything they were trying to do. And so it becomes a very interesting phenomenon, but the short answer is they want you to know what they've done. They want you to know what they were trying to do, obviously, or they wouldn't have left it like that. You know, we have a variety of different things happening like that on this planet. We have the ESA, and this is all the same psychological tricks, basically. The ESA is calling attention, getting in a big fight with Richard Hoagland. Why would they fight with him at all? I mean, if he's a nutball. Well, they're calling your attention to something he said about Phobos that he may be right on. They want you to know about something. If the Germans are leaving something in place and not blowing it to hell and showing, you know, and everyone knows what this thing looks like, well, they want someone to figure it out. Oh, it's all fascinating stuff. When you deal with the mythos, the myth behind something can be just as important as the facts and the legacy it leaves. And it produces a whole entire aura or whatever else. And there's a whole, you know, I mean, this is still an ongoing game here, right? This is still an ongoing process of discovery. But in the experiment itself, in the experiment itself, several different things happened. One of the very famous things that always comes out everywhere is that everything went to goo. Everything in the area was turned into goo. And I was asked precisely about this. And I was asked several other questions regarding regarding pyramids, but it's all in the area of torsion. What is torsion? Torsion is a spiraling, folding, and pleating in the fabric of space-time itself. What the Germans believe is that it's engineerable. The funniest thing about de Glock is that the pink rabbit physics starts with Einstein, and Einstein's developing a unified field theory. He's developing a theory, and then they're trying to make it engineerable. And to this day, they can machine it. They can nanotech. They have all this nanotechnology based on it. They can machine the living daylights out of it, but they can't move beyond that state. What the white rabbits are doing is something direct opposite. What the Germans were doing was engineering something into existence, the Glock. And by engineering it into existence, they were deriving the unified physics from it. In other words, the pink rabbits are developing a theory and trying to make it engineerable. What we're doing is engineering something and then deriving the physics from it. It's kind of funny. You pink rabbits are completely upside down. But it's kind of funny how they did that. They embraced a mode of thinking that was direct opposite, which is what you should do. It's pretty funny stuff. That brief little tangent there, but that's something that very few people point out, and the Dr. Farrells have alluded to this. He alluded to it in one of the particular talks I've heard him give, but it's kind of funny if you think about it. They did the direct opposite of Einstein. But anyways, that's probably why they were so successful. But when you deal with the decay factor, when you deal with even when the pyramid, I was asked questions directly about Russian scientists and pyramid. I'm going to get to that next. But it's down the same avenue of torsion. When you're dealing with this rapid decay that set in by this field around the Glock when they were in their test phase, how many people it killed when it first went off? Well, if you leave out a piece of fruit or something like that, eventually time is gonna cause a decay, right? Because you're leaving out fruit. and so it has some unique, this particular type of physics has all kinds of different implications for Newtonian and relativistic physics. The problem with relativistic and Newtonian physics, in regards to temporal calculations, that is talking about time, is they don't take in account, on any of their calculations, they don't take in account this concept of torsion. This concept of torsion. They don't take into account this phenomenon, the folding, pleating, and, the spiraling, folding, and pleating of the fabric of space-time itself. They don't take into account this concept. They don't take into account this concept. and to explain it, Dr. Farrell explains it quite well. I was asked to explain it in real terms. If you were to empty a Coca-Cola can, and then you would treat the Coca-Cola can as space-time itself, and you would just wrench it down like a dish rag, you're getting an ideal of torsion. Anything caught within that field, just like the missile like the Russian missile, gets zapped. But it also has a serious field effect on the element. Obviously, it has several implications for time itself. And when you get into the actual German researchers, there was one by the name of Hildenberg. And that's his last name. I want to say it's like off Christian Hildenberg in the late 30s. And he said, if this physics is true, then the constants of physics are not constant, and they have to vary over time. And they were talking about this in the late 30s. In other words, the constants we think are what we think of as constants in physics are not constant. They vary over time because of this particular physics, because of the torsion phenomenon. And relativistic and Newtonian temporal calculations are all... would all be off big time. Basically, the temporal flow would vary based on certain planetary alignments, and you would have to everything we know about calculating time, basically, even in regards to historical events, would be thrown off. And this is all encompassing. For instance, in Dr. Farrell's The Cosmic War, he's not really interested in the timeline. He talks about Van Flanders in previous books, how old these cosmic wars are, millions of years or whatever. But that's kind of in a passing conversation. He's only interested in the politics, the weapons fought in the war, the parties involved. you know, that's really always interesting. I'm sure he's interested in the timeline. I was asked about a more precise date. Well, Van Flanders, these are all just thrown out there as approximations simply for this reason. Everything we know would be up in the air all the times, all of our calculations regarding time, because none of them, everything's based on relativistic or Newtonian temporal calculations, and they don't take into account distortion. And the Germans were dealing with this in the late 30s. So when you start dealing with the field effect or massive decay setting in, you all go into this particular area, and I can only send you in a direction. If you go to GizaDeathStar.com, you're going to find someone there that can explain these in much better terms. But it is something the Germans were dealing with as far as the late 30s. It's something that we'll have to deal with. But we're used to things in Newtonian terms, or terms of relativistic terms, and you're dealing with another part of the equation. Another part of the equation that can be tapped into and engineerable. And so when you're dealing with the rapid decay effect, it all goes into this area that I am not the best one to be explaining it to you. And what does this have to do with pyramids? Well, the pyramid structure itself, and Dr. Farrell's theory is caught on. I'm going to go into how it's caught on in the actual movies. But this theory is that the Giza complex, I'm talking about, there's pyramids all over this earth, but the actual Giza complex was used for destructive purposes, was used for a giant war and then refashioned after that war to make it harmless, basically. All the weapons were, everything was gutted out of it. But he believes that the pyramid structure itself, and you go into the Russian research, and this is going to go into answering your next question because it all goes into this time, is a gigantic torsion field gravity resonator designed to manipulate the local torsion field set up by the Earth itself. That's a lot to get a hold of. So the structure itself is pretty unique depending on what you want to do with it. And there's all different types of pyramids built all across this planet, very well known. You can build them for different reasons, I guess, but the question is regarding resurrection. Resurrection, you go into the areas of time, basically, and we're talking about pyramids in regards to the Russian experiments where all these plants that are supposedly prehistoric and disappeared 10,000 years ago start growing. This resurrection effect to the pyramid structure or to this particular type of physics, because once again, we're getting into torsion, aren't we? So it doesn't matter whether it's decay of the clock, the massive decay that's set in, or this concept of a resurrection machine, which brings up all different types of questions in regarding this one-fourth area the Nazis went into, the National Socialists, the Germans went into. Whether it be a resurrection machine or all the different types of stuff, you're dealing with torsion physics, you're dealing with one of the phenomenons related to it, and that is that our particular type of thinking is by and large influenced by Newtonian relativistic, and it doesn't take into account this torsion phenomenon in regards to time. So when it goes to Van Flanders' timing of these ancient cosmic wars that Farrell refers to, he's just throwing those out there. He knows that those can't possibly be correct. They're just kind of like, 50 million years ago, whatever he uses. We're not accurate on anything. What the Germans are saying is if this physics proves true, all the constants are not constant that we're taking into account. So everything's basically in motion here. And that is one of the big game changers. But I am not the best one to answer questions about the pyramid structure as a resurrection machine or what the Russian researchers did. He can tell you the researchers. And one thing I do know about the researchers is you can't interview them right now. There are several of them still alive and still ongoing research, and they're still building things there. They're still building things. I don't know any... I don't have the direct sources. They're all in the Giza Death Star series, but he can rattle them off to you over and over again. It's a lot of phenomenon associated with this particular type of physics, this torsion physics, regarding what torsion is within itself, especially when you contemplate the engineering of it, making it or actually going in and engineering the fabric of space-time itself, the folding, the pleating, the spiraling. But that is a simplified explanation to the questions I've been asked. He is someone at Giza Death Star that can answer your questions. I wouldn't tell him I referred you, because he probably doesn't know I exist, and that's totally okay. I just read his books, and we just listen to what he has to say. But he is someone very good at explaining these in very simplified terms. But everything you know about time, throw it out the window. because time is just a number. But I went into very very simplified explanations of de Glock. That will not do it justice in the long run. There'll be details that come out that really have everyone scratching their rabbit ears, and that's totally a-okay. I'm just trying to get you in the area of the direction the truth is going to go, if there is any such thing. Now, in regarding, I released 61 and 62 should be released right at the same time. In the last one, I talked about this ancient cosmic war and how it shows up in Star Wars. There is a modern movie, and I didn't include it there, and I forgot to, and I apologize. But I'm going to talk about something else, another variation that is actually more interesting and more solid. It's closer to the actual storyline. And the movie is called Transformers, and Transformers is about the Decepticons and the Autobots. And they had an ancient cosmic war, and that ancient cosmic war basically moves to Earth. And in the first one, humans find out that aliens, these Autobots, they're almost like electronic life forms, machines that come to life, have been living with us for a long time. And then there's a piece of their technology that they fought the ancient war over here, hidden here. And they got to have the Autobots have it, because if the Decepticons get it, they're going to use it to claim our sun and destroy our planet. In the second movie, it gets more interesting. To me, at least, because the second movie, they have, at the end of the first movie, the head of the Autobots, Optimus Prime is his name. He's a big cohiba. He takes out Megatron. And Megatron can't die, but he is buried. He's buried in the abyss, in the ocean. And several of the Decepticons in the beginning get him out of the abyss, basically get him back to life, and he flies back up to his master, the Fallen, who's on this big, wrecked spacecraft in another planet from this ancient war. And so the Fallen, we find out, was the one who waged the ancient war. And we find out what the ancient war between the Autobots and the Decepticons was about. The Fallen was called the Fallen because he took their particular technology and he used it for destructive purposes. Embedded in the pyramid, in the Giza plateau itself. This is how the movie says. In the Giza complex, the Great Pyramid contained another structure, and that structure was used to attempt to claim our sun. And one of the rules they had for their physics, the primes, the ones who run the show for the Transformers, is that this physics could never be used. Their particular technology could never be used to destroy a life-bearing planet. And the Fallen was called the Fallen because he had used the physics to destroy a life-bearing planet. And so from that day forward, he was called the Fallen. And they waged a war, and they took away his technology. What they took away was they took away a key component of the technology called the Matrix of Leadership. And the Matrix of Leadership activates the pyramid, which can then claim our sun and destroy our planet and everything else. You'd have to see the movie, but if you read Dr. Farrell's Cosmic War, if you've listened to any of this stuff, if you've read any of the Hoagland references this stuff, there's several different parties now coming online about this ancient cosmic war. Me, I'm an agnostic. I don't know what I believe, but I'm ready for anything because I've read it all. But this movie is a much closer, almost eerie. It's eerie on how close it is to this story that the Dr. Farrells are talking about. That's in the beginning of the Bible. We think of the Bible as a creation story. It is not. It is a war epic when one side gets thrown down. The Fallen. He loses. And he has an apprentice, Megatron. But what's fascinating about this story is how close it actually is. And the third movie, of course, is coming out. It is a final epic between the Decepticons and Autobots. And it is done by Steven Spielberg himself. And this is about the two sides are racing to get back to the moon, because hidden in the south side of the moon is one of the key components of something about this mystery, something about this ancient war that they had. So on the moon is this huge wreckage that humans come across. And the Autobots are trying to get to this wreckage first to find out its secrets so that the Decepticons can't use it. Now that's coming out. It will first play in, of all things, Egyptian museum, in Egyptian's movies, I'm sorry, Egyptian movie theaters sometime, I want to say, in April. Or maybe it's July. It's sometime soon. You can look it up. Transformers, The Dark Side of the Moon. Look it up. Watch the movies. They're fascinating stuff if this is what you're interested into. But this theme that we've talked about is not unknown. It's biblical. It's far and wide. And the exact theme is coming out in the Transformer movies by and large. But anyways, in the final installment, they're racing back to the dark side of the moon. And I haven't seen the movie yet, so it's impossible for me to know what twists and turns it'll take. But you can watch the previews. Just watch the previews. The first preview came on during the Super Bowl, I believe, which I wasn't watching. But I have seen the previews, and it's interesting. But that is an interesting movie series. It is probably much more precise as far as the theme of the Giza complex and the technology being used for destructive purposes and someone forever being known as the Fallen. After it is fascinating how close it captures the Dr. Farrell's interpretation of what happened and what, you know, different other parties are now coming online. They just didn't want to be the first to say it. But this is an interesting as we come in further along the end game, how all these different themes are coming out and overlapping one another. But media is very important. Media is very important. And we'll have to see what Steven Spielberg's take is on the dark side of the moon, won't we? An ancient space wreck there from the first cosmic war between the Autobots and the Decepticons, and they have to get there to find out its secrets. Interesting stuff. Fascinating stuff. But I'll keep you abreast of that, since all hell is going to break loose any day. Yes, it will. Iran will probably send boats near Syria or something, their ally Syria, and then Israel counter that, and we'll end up in a war, and who knows what events are going to transpire to kick off World War III. Someone does. Someone does. Leave it to the little pink rabbits. They will jump into the fire. Yes, they will. But this has been a little bit longer Follow the White Rabbit. I'm trying to catch up with alternative news and researchers, trying to answer your questions or send you down legitimate paths so you can get some healthy carrots. You know, it's very difficult to know about stealth bombers until they bomb Saddam Hussein. All you can do is know that the Russians, certain Russians, are saying they exist, and you might want to look out for it. We are the last to know, and we're the last to believe. That is the nature of white rabbits. It's kind of funny. But we will always keep this, we'll keep this conversation alive until we see the rot of the pink rabbits. We are now at the end of another episode of Horus the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. And this podcast is, of course, all as always, dedicated to practical politics. But I'd like to take this time to thank you for tuning in and to another episode. On behalf of the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, it is yours truly, Horus the Avenger. And I'll be back with you in another episode in the near future. Until then, thank you for listening. So pale.